welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, we'll hear Murder Mansion on Inner Sanctum. But right now, it's suspense with the Robert L. Richards story, The House in Cypress Canyon. Featuring Robert Taylor, Kathy Lewis, Wally Mayer, and Howard Duff, radio's Sam Spade, this marks the third anniversary program for the series from December 5th, 1946 on CBS.
And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, presents Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer. Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. Yes, right now, a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Undercurrent, in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
This real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, You know, we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All they got in were the foundations, just concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
Well, what do you want? Police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now of 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago, well, they just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, and I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. And, well, I don't like it, that's all. There's something funny about it.
What's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House that was only just started building.
All right.
Well, listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern, my reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but the fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas, we were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look.
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know what a sign like that. It'd mean right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim...
Either they want $600 a month...
We'll never know until we ask.
But if it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Well, no Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's going to give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
You, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh, yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do you do? Wow, looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it? Things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. Been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it was owned by a bank in Sacramento. Of course, we didn't
care about
it. Got
this key in the mail along with the authorization to rent. Only one there is. Of course, you can have duplicates made. Yeah, seems to stick a little. Oh, no, there it is.
Doesn't sound as though that door had ever been opened.
Well, a little oil on the hinges will fix that, all right.
Oh, sure.
Now here's your living room. Furniture's a little dusty, of course. You got to expect that. It's good furniture, though, you see? Benson Brothers.
Yes,
Now, over here's a little den. Paneled, you see? Radio, fireplace. Really a very attractive little room, particularly for a man.
Uh-huh, yep.
Now, the bedroom's off the living room here. Everything's all on one floor, you understand?
Uh-huh.
It's quite nice, I think.
Yes, uh-huh.
You can see you get the morning sun here. There's a view of the canyon through these front windows. You got cross ventilation.
That's about all there was to it. It wasn't the best place in the world. It was small and badly built, but what would you have done? We took it with as little inspection as that. It was the Saturday before Christmas. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things that everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own
personality. Don't be such a sourpuss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay.
Oh, I guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Well, of course you can't, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found in the desk?
Mm. Here.
Nope. Not this one. Sure, this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is.
Oh, but, honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a little
bit.
Yeah,
but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen, I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
Right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference
we
in the world.
Can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday, then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim.
It's some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except that closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in the closet that's been locked up for over a year?
Oh, I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like
it. Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Oh, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Oh, all right, I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah, all right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was, perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Did you have a nightmare or something?
No. I heard it, too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be... out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
Well, I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Sticky.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. But to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood, that's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with the real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim?
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh?
Oh, no.
Well, it seems to be all right now.
Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of noise and you got a little panicky.
What
and...
about the blood? It got on my hand.
Isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks just take it easy. You're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah. I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right. That's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us any time.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey, you ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. Say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. It was sometime after midnight when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, den, even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look. For I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, the fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment, I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. A sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night, there was no sleep.
Jim?
Yes, Ellen?
Oh. What are you doing up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless, went out to make some coffee.
Oh. Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just hurt it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I
now
will.
You promised me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
Dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Well, you mean there's all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. The pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is, such a rapid onset of infection."
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. For somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps in the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or life. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness, and in that closet first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now. Deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. For some time in the early hours of the morning, I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why? Surely a minor question now. I only know that I did. And then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4,000 block. A report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman, poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this, it's
all
nothing
right,
not a
stand talk. Back, all stand right, back. Please, please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
He was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know is childish, useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but that's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow, only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. But there's someone at the door.
Someone at the door. What do you make of it, Sam?
It's quite a yarn. But what of it?
That's what I thought. Now, listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip two, it's a newspaper clip. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping, well, you have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today, but that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what, a guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something?
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Too bits you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay, coincidence. Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Sam.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the for rent sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right, huh?
Listen, when a guy named, whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you, then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Oh, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines, selected for your pleasure from the world's greatest reserves of fine wines. Tonight's show marks the third birthday of Suspense on the Air, and this is Ken Niles asking our star of the evening, Robert Taylor, to help us celebrate.
Why didn't you tell me before, Ken? If I'd only known, I'd have baked a cake.
Well, Bob, all Suspense parties are surprise parties. As an old hand on Suspense, you know that in our plays, the tables are usually turned on the star. So tonight, although it's our birthday, we're going to give you a present. Here it is, a gift basket of Grand Estate California wines from Roma, America's greatest vintner, to our distinguished anniversary guest, Robert Taylor.
Thanks, Ken. You turn a nice table.
And you can set a nice table with Grand Estate Burgundy in your basket, Bob.
Now, Ken, who's all set to star on Suspense next Thursday?
It's that very wonderful actress and wonderful girl, Miss Susan Peters. Susan will appear as a young lady in straitened circumstances who finds herself mistaken for a very rich young lady and who is forced into continuing the deception with murder as a result.
Well, I'll certainly make it a point to listen. And before I go, I'd like to thank this really great company of actors who have played with me tonight, and particularly Kathy Lewis, who played Ellen.
Thank you, Bob.
Tonight's original Suspense play was written by Robert L. Richards. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Miss Susan Peters as star of Suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from December 5th, 1946 on CBS, showcasing the Robert L. Richards story, The House in Cypress Canyon. Richards, a frequent contributor to the series, with no less than 40 scripts for the show, mainly writing murder mysteries of all kinds. He also showcased his work on the anthology series The Cavalcade of America. It's an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to Inner Sanctum Mysteries, this episode, Murder Mansion, from CBS, first heard on March 27, 1950.
Good evening, friends. This is your host again to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in. Come on in. I want you to meet Ambrose, our man-shy ghost. The other night in a graveyard, he bumped into a human and was so frightened he turned flesh-colored. Yes, poor Ambrose. He's got a bad case of ants in his fantasies. He's so upset he's just a ghost of his former... ghost. Was a time when we held high hope for Ambrose. Oh, yes, at Abnormal U, he was cited by his crass mates as the personality most likely to split. And now, let's visit Murder Mansion. For over 100 years, the old house has stood on the cliff, weathering the relentless ocean winds that have battered at its gray shingles. Now, in the living room, the real estate agent and the new buyer are completing the arrangements of sale.
Only one thing bothers me, Mr. Griffin. That graveyard just outside the window there. Are you sure nothing can be done about it?
I'm sorry, Mr. Burley. You know the conditions set down in the deed. The Crandall family burial ground must remain on the property untampered with.
Well, those Crandalls must have been a morbid family, having themselves buried right next to the house they lived in.
Yes, they were peculiar. I guess they figured it was a way of keeping the family together.
You shouldn't laugh, Mr. Griffin.
What? What are you doing here?
I hope I'm not too late. This is the gentleman who's planning to buy the house?
Mr. Burley's already bought it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, look. What is this, Griffin? Who is this woman?
I'm Emily Robbins. Mr. Burley, please, you must sell this house immediately to me.
Sell it? That's ridiculous. I just bought it.
Mr. Griffin never should have allowed you to.
Now, see here, Mrs. Robbins.
Just a minute, Griffin. I want to hear what she has to say.
Well, all right, but you can see she isn't exactly accountable.
You're bad, Mr. Griffin. You promised to sell the house to me, but you couldn't wait until I had the money, could you?
I'm in the real estate business, not charity.
Mrs. Robbins, I still want to hear why Griffin shouldn't have sold me this house.
Because, Mr. Burley, a house isn't just a thing made of wood and stone and mortar. It's almost a living, breathing creature. It accepts and rejects people just the way we do. I was born a Crandall, and only a Crandall may live here. Anybody but a Crandall would be an enemy within its walls. You'd never spend a happy moment here.
Oh, you see, Mr. Burley, I told you. She doesn't make sense.
Please, Mr. Burley, for your own sake, sell it.
Ah. Oh, you can't frighten me into a quick sale. No, I know I'll buy when I see it. My wife and I will be living here within a few days.
I'm sorry, Mr. Burley, but I don't think you will. I don't think you will ever live here.
Helen! Oh, Helen!
Mr. Burley?
Yes, Ada. Where's Mrs. Burley? I want to tell her I got that house at my price.
Oh, sir, you'd better go upstairs. The doctor's still there.
Doctor? What's the matter?
Oh, Mr. Burley.
What is it, Ada? What is it?
Your wife is dead.
What?
She seemed so well after lunch. She was upstairs napping, and when she didn't come down at the usual time, I went up. I tried to wake her, but...
Helen dead? No, it can't be. It just can't be.
I tried to get you everywhere.
But she hadn't been sick. There's no reason she should die.
Dr. Hirschman said the same thing. He said that... Oh. Hello?
Is Mr. Burley there, please?
Well, Mr. Burley can't come to the phone right now. He...
Oh, it's all right, Ada. I'll take it.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Mr. Burley, this is Mrs. Robbins.
Miss...
I called to ask you if you've changed your mind about selling me the house.
Can I bring you something, Mr. Burley?
No, Ada, thank you.
Sir, I know it's none of my business, but maybe you shouldn't have come to live in this house. Maybe you should have sold it to Mrs. Robbins.
I had to come here. I have to prove to myself that a house can have no evil influence over life and death.
Of course it can't.
And yet, according to the doctor, my wife passed away almost at the very moment I bought this house. I'm so confused, I don't know what to think.
I'm not one to butt in, but you are letting the house have an effect on you. Well, you haven't moved from that window all evening.
I'm just trying to fathom things out.
You've been standing there staring out at that graveyard.
I'm all right. Now, let me alone.
Yes, sir. Good night, Mr. Burley.
Good night. Hey,
Dad. What is it, sir?
That graveyard out there. When the lightning flashed just then, I saw it.
Saw what?
It was a new headstone among the old ones. A brand new headstone. Mr. Griffin... How long ago was the last Crandall buried in the graveyard out there?
The last one? Let's see. Oh, yes, it was Vincent Crandall. He died 20 years ago.
20 years? Then his headstone would have been a little worn by this time.
Well, sure it would, but what are you...
Then what is the meaning of the new headstone?
New?
Come to the window. I'll show you.
Oh, now, Mr. Burley...
There's a brand new headstone out there over a fresh grave.
Oh, but that's impossible.
I saw it first when the lightning flashed.
You must be imagining things.
Then see for yourself. Here, take this flashlight. Shine it out there on the graves and see for yourself.
All right.
Well?
Mr. Burley, maybe you better see a doctor.
Doctor?
They're all old headstones out there. The new one is only in your mind.
Give me that flashlight.
Mr. Griffin, what?
Oh, you've been under a terrible strain. Your wife's sudden death and all.
I don't know. What made me think I saw a new headstone out there? I want to sell this house. Right away.
Well, you know, it takes a little time to arrange a sale.
Well, what about that Robbins woman? She'll buy it. She's been bothering me all along to sell it to her.
Yeah, but Mrs. Robbins can't pay you a decent price.
Well, I don't care. I'll take anything she offers. I want you to get in touch with her.
All right, Mr. Burley. I'll call her in the morning.
No. I can't wait until then. I want this house sold tonight.
Mr. Griffin, why Mr. Burley had to bring me out here this time of the night?
Well, he's made up his mind to sell. He wants to close the deal tonight.
You don't want me to have this house, do you?
Look, Mrs. Robbins, I don't care who gets it, just as long as it's at a decent price.
So you can get a higher commission. You're a very selfish man, Mr. Griffin.
Not in business for love.
Your wife did well to leave you.
She was as crazy as you are. Why doesn't he answer the door? What's taking him so long?
Oh, mercy! What was that?
Someone screaming. Came from... Say, the garage. There's a light in there. Come on.
Whoever screamed must be in that garage.
Well, we'll soon find out.
But maybe it isn't safe for us to go in there. Well,
that's a chance I'm going to have to take. What? Ada.
Mr. Griffin.
Well, that was you who screamed, huh?
Yes.
Why? What happened?
Mr. Burley.
What is it, Ada? What about Mr. Burley?
He's dead.
What?
He left the house an hour ago. I looked out of the window and noticed that the garage here was lit. I came out and I found him slumped over in the car, dead.
How dreadful.
Well, this place is filled with carbon monoxide fumes.
It wouldn't have happened. None of it. If he hadn't bought the house...
Now, look, Mrs. Robbins, this is no time for that superstitious nonsense of yours.
She's right, Mr. Griffin. It is nonsense.
What do you mean, Ada?
Here. Look. On the back seat of the car.
Good Lord. A new headstone.
Anybody want to buy a house? The Crandall place is a real buy. All you have to give for it is your life. Too bad about our friend Mr. Burley, huh? Thought he was getting a bargain basement, but instead he's ended up in a basement he didn't bargain for. Yes, he should have taken old Lady Robin's advice, which in a phrase was, one man's menage is another man's mall. Well, now, let's get back to our mystical manor. A week has passed since Burley's death, and the real estate agent, Mr. Griffin, has found a new buyer.
Here's your check, Mr. Griffin.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wagner.
I consider this house a real buy.
Well, you're the only person who's had any interest in it since Mr. Burley died. The place has gotten a bad name. Most people are superstitious, I guess. Wouldn't live here if you paid them.
Superstition never bothered me. Mr. Griffin.
Yes?
What are you looking at that way?
There's a graveyard out there. I don't understand.
Understand? What are you trying to say?
There were always 10 graves out there, I'm sure. But now there's 11.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Robbins, but nothing you say can persuade me to sell.
Please, Mr. Wagner, for your own sake, don't be stubborn. It may cost you your life. You know what happened to Mr. Burley and his wife.
Well, I've always prided myself on being a jinx breaker.
Oh, be sensible. That's a very silly reason to live here.
Maybe I have another reason, too.
What do you mean?
Charles Burley was a very close friend of mine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I told it to Mr. Griffin. Now I'm telling you. I knew Burley like a brother. Everything about him. Mrs. Robbins, he wasn't the type to commit suicide.
Oh, but he didn't commit suicide.
Oh, you seem to know a lot about it.
I do.
Then maybe you can tell me who killed him.
I can.
Who?
This house is the killer.
Now, look.
Oh, it is, Mr. Wagner. I know. You don't believe me, do you?
Of course not.
Well, soon you'll find out that I'm telling the truth.
That sounds like a threat.
No, no, Mr. Wagner. I'm not threatening you. I'm just trying to help. I'm just giving you a chance to live. One more chance to sell me this house at my price.
And if I refuse?
If you don't sell it to me now, well, then I'll buy it after your death.
I see. Well, Mrs. Robbins, there's nothing more we can talk about. I'm sure you know your way out. Good afternoon.
Good day, Mr. Wagner.
Hello, Mrs. Robbins.
Oh, what are you doing here?
Oh, didn't you know? I'm Mr. Wagner's new maid.
Hello.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes?
Well, come over here to the Crandall house right away. Mr. Wagner wants to see you.
Why, who is this?
It's very important, Mr. Griffin. Come as quickly as you can.
Yes, but who is this? Hello. Hello. Hello.
Your number, please.
Operator, get me Maine 6539 and hurry.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir, but that line is disconnected.
Disconnected? What? Well, that's impossible. I just spoke to someone at that number. Try them again.
I'm sorry, sir, but I checked. There is no way I can get you the number.
Come in, Mr. Griffin.
Mrs. Robbins, what are you doing here at the Crandall house?
I was waiting for you, Mr. Griffin.
I don't understand.
Come in, please. I was the one who called you on the phone to come out here. I didn't say who I was because I didn't want to mention names.
But I tried to get the phone here right after you hung up. The operator said the line was disconnected.
It is. The wire has been cut. I walked down the road to the mobile gas station to call you to come out here.
Mrs. Robbins, just what is this all about anyway? Why are you here and where is Ada and Mr. Wagner?
Ada's left. She's gone away. For good.
What?
On the hall table over there, a note from Ada to Mr. Wagner, explaining why she left.
And what about Mr. Wagner himself? Where is he?
In the dining room. Oh, wait, please, don't go in there. He's dead.
Mr. Wagner dead?
When I came in, he was slumped over the table.
When you came in, huh?
Well, the way you say that, Mr. Griffin, you make it sound like you think I killed poor Mr. Wagner.
Well, what should I think?
Oh, I wouldn't do a thing like that.
Then suppose you tell me exactly what you're doing out here tonight.
Well, it's like this, Mr. Griffin. I was home in bed, but I couldn't sleep. A strange feeling kept running through me that I should come out here and try to convince Mr. Wagner that he should sell the house before another day passed.
Oh, a feeling, eh?
You can believe me.
Oh, sure.
When I arrived out here, the door was open and everything is just as you see it.
What about the police?
I didn't call them.
Why not?
Because I wanted to speak to you first.
Speak to me with a murdered man in the next room?
It wasn't murder. It was just the will of this house. And I want this house.
You'd do anything to get it, wouldn't you?
Yes. Anything.
Even murder? Yes. Mrs. Robbins, I'm driving down the road to make a phone call to the police. Ada, what are you doing here?
I was watching you and Mrs. Robbins through the window.
Mr. Wagner is dead.
I know.
But how could you?
You left the house this morning.
I saw his body slumped over the table. You think the same as I do, don't you?
Well, what do you mean by that?
You suspect Mrs. Robbins, too.
In a way. But I also suspect you, Ada.
Me?
But I can't exactly figure out what your game is.
Game? I have no game.
Then why did you leave a note saying you were going away?
What note?
There's no use lying. I saw it myself on the hall table.
But you must be mistaken. Today is my day off. I left the house early this morning. I didn't write a note.
Well, if you are telling the truth...
I am.
Then I know who did write that note. You wait right here for me. I'll be back in 10 minutes. Keep your eye on the house.
Where are you going?
The phone inside is disconnected. I'm going down the road to call the police.
I'll go with you.
Why?
I'd rather not stay here alone.
Mrs. Robbins doesn't know you're out here. You're safe.
But just the same, I'd feel better if I went with you.
I'm not taking you with me.
You act as if you're afraid of me.
Maybe I am.
But why?
Why? Because when Mrs. Burley died, you were in the house. The same with Mr. Burley. And now Mr. Wagner. You were there when every victim died, Ada. I won't let you in this car with me.
You called the police, Mr. Griffin?
Yes, they're on the way out now. By the way, what are you doing here in this kitchen?
Oh, I was just walking through the rooms, recalling the happy moments I spent here when I was young.
You sure that's the only reason?
Why, yes.
I thought maybe Ada had something to do with it.
Ada? You know very well she's left. You saw her note.
Ada didn't write that note.
What?
I talked to her outside this house 15 minutes ago. She was to wait out there for me until I got back. She wasn't there. What's happened to her?
I didn't see Ada, but wait.
What is it?
About 5 minutes ago, I thought I heard something move down the cellar.
The cellar?
Yes, but then I thought it was just my imagination.
Hold on a minute.
What's the matter?
Just now. I heard it, too. Something or someone is down there. Come on. We're going down into the cellar to look around.
Mr. Griffin, look. Look, it's lit down there in the cellar.
Yes. Go on. You're going first so I can keep my eye on you.
Mr. Griffin.
What is it?
The hole in the floor here.
Huh?
Well, one of the stone flooring slabs has been removed. There's an old well down there. I remember it was sealed up when I was a little girl.
Yes. And I can see the slab was freshly removed. I wonder why.
Mr. Griffin.
What now?
Behind you, in the shadows. Look, there's a woman's body.
It's Ada.
You say it.
Yes, I know.
Why, you say it as if you were sure we would find her this way.
I was sure. You see, Mrs. Robbins, I killed her. I didn't have quite enough time to dispose of her body in the old well here. I heard you moving about upstairs in the kitchen.
But why did you kill her, Mr. Griffin?
Because she insisted on living in this house like the others.
Then it wasn't this house. It wasn't because they weren't grandmas.
Of course not, but your idiotic superstition about this place helped my plan. Mrs. Burley's sudden, peculiar death was a lucky coincidence for me. It gave me the idea for the others. I needed a series of deaths to completely destroy the value of this place, so no one would ever live in it.
But why?
On several occasions, you mentioned my wife, Mrs. Robbins. You see, you were wrong about her, as everybody else was wrong. She didn't run away from me. She would have, but I killed her. And her body is down at the bottom of that well, just as Ada's will be, and just as yours will be.
But the police are coming. They'll find you out.
You foolish old woman. Do you think I really called them? Now, Mrs. Robbins...
No, no, please don't come near me.
You wanted to stay in this house. Now you will, forever.
No.
You're going to get the thing you wanted most.
Help!
kill her.
Oh!
You're not going to kill her, too.
Ada.
Yes, Ada.
No, it can't be. You're dead.
Not yet. Not completely. I've just enough life left.
No, my leg. Let me go. Let me go. The well. I'll fall in there. Left.
Ada. Oh, Ada. You thought it was nonsense, didn't you, Mr. Griffin? But it was this house that kept her alive long enough to protect me. My house, Mr. Griffin.
Well, as they say, all's well that ends in a well. Say, folks, what about that Griffin character? Just goes to show how a property agent can sink to such an unreal estate. Yes, sir, that's what I call tripping over your own plot. Now, Mrs. Robbins will never be lonely. No, when things get dull, she can always step outside the house and dig up a relative or two.
Inner Sanctum on Tuned to Yesterday from March 27th, 1950 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.